This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm Melissa Moretti.
And Melissa, on the show today, we have Ben Vella from Brass Financial. And we're talking commercial real estate accounting 101.
Love that.
A lot of our listeners may not understand how, you know, when you buy commercial real estate, maybe ways you can potentially save property transfer tax.
Mm-hmm.
People don't maybe not know how to count for real estate income. They mm-hmm. may not understand that like your interest on your mortgage is a tax deductible expense. So we get Ben here and we dive into commercial real estate accounting 101. And I'll say I took a lot back from that episode there. And I deal with Ben all the time. I was really surprised with some of the stuff he said in a very good way.
Yeah. It's a very interesting topic. Something you're not, you know, thinking about every day, but it's something that's very useful once you really get into it.
Very useful. It is spring break right now. I know a lot of people are out and about and doing their travels. And you mentioned to me you're going to
Palm Springs in a couple weeks.
Oh, a couple weeks after spring break you're going.
Yeah.
What's in Palm Springs?
I'm going for a bachelorette party.
A bachelorette party in Palm Springs where it's nearly wed, nearly dead. That sounds really exciting. What do you do for a bachelorette party in Palm Springs?
Good question. I don't know. We're just going to hang out by the pool. I've never been to Palm Springs. I have no idea.
I went in November to Palm Desert.
Right.
It was good. Yeah. Very relaxing.
Okay.
I don't know how I say this. Well, I'll preface it with this. I have some gray hair coming in.
Yes.
So I can say this with pride now because I look like a walking Cheerio stick. I feel with my red hair and my gray hair coming in. I've never seen so much Tommy Bahama and gray hair getting on a plane in my life than when I loaded the plane to go to Palm Springs.
Okay.
So I think we all live vicariously just to end up there.
Yes.
I don't know if you'd want to end up there in your 30s.
I mean, it's kind of my vibe.
It's kind of your old soul vibe type thing.
Yeah, old soul, you know, just chilling a little bit. You know, I like that. When I go on vacation, that's what I want.
So I've never been to Scottsdale.
Right.
But I've heard a lot of people say Scottsdale's kind of like a Vegas, but kind of like not as rowdy and for like more mature people.
Okay.
So for a bachelorette party, if it's not too late, you may want to detour that plane from Palm Springs into Arizona.
I'll let them know. I'll just tell pretty all close 12 to, girls, hey,
yeah.
Corey has come up with a new plan.
Yeah, get a spot at the W there. Go get a couple of times with the W Scottsdale.
Great idea.
It'd be great. You could go check out the Phoenix Coyotes hockey team. You might be one of 200 people watching the game there live. Be interesting.
Sounds great. I will absolutely let you plan the next bachelorette.
All right. Well, without further ado, why don't we get to our episode today with Ben Vella of Brass Financial?
All right.
Enjoy, guys. This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial. John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have,
friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
Attention realtors, homebuyers, and investors. If you missed out on Atlin at Clayton Crest by Zentera Developments, here's your second chance.
Atlin sold 80% in just 3 months, Adam. And because of that success, Zentera is launching Building 2, Butte.
Located in West Clayton and walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, prices are still low for now, but not for long.
Homeowners across the Lower Mainland are using equity from their current homes to invest in West Clayton, ahead of the SkyTrain and the next market upswing. Because when that SkyTrain is complete and the market rebounds, it'll be too late.
This, Matt, is how wealth is built. Find out why Atlin sold so fast and register now at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
All right, today we have Ben Vella, director at Brass Financial. Ben, how are you doing today?
Good, yourself?
Good, thanks. Thanks so much for taking your time to join us today. Can you maybe tell us a little bit more about yourself and Brass Financial?
Yeah, no problem. So I've been in the accounting profession since I was very young. My father was an accountant, and I worked with him, and then I moved on to Deloitte. Subsequently, I then created my own practice, and yeah, it's been fantastic. Been loving it ever since. So I mainly help small to medium sized private companies in minimizing tax and their exposures and understanding their business.
Well, that's why I wanted to have you on today. We, as a podcast of the people, we've had various listeners reach out over a period of time asking all about the accounting aspect of commercial real estate, good and bad. So we reached out to Ben. Ben's a busy guy. We hogtied him down. We got him to join us today. So we're going to dig into commercial real estate accounting 101. And we'll talk a little bit more about maybe potentially ways when you purchase commercial real estate, different ways of purchasing, such as a share sale and the benefits. We can maybe talk a little bit more about the different structures that are there. And also, how does this stuff get taxed? So Ben, I'm going to throw this question out there and you can sort of take it where you want. Commercial real estate tax 101, what are the pitfalls that I need to know about?
So I guess, you know, from an income tax perspective, especially within companies, you've just got to be aware that in certain circumstances, if you're buying the property for an investment and you're not an owner operator, that you could potentially be paying 51% tax within that company. So it's really important to understand the structure that you're going into and also the circumstances for which you're entering into the purchase. There are opportunities to actually bring that down, you know, such as being an owner-operator, having the holding company and operating a separate business within that company. You know, you can look to claim the small business deduction and use the, you know, in BC, the 12% tax rate that's offered to corporations. So there are a multitude of ways to reduce the tax, but that's a big one. The other one is also the structure that you put into place to keep that, you know, to obviously how you're going to house it.
For the small business tax, what do you have to do to qualify for that? Like, could any person just, you know, create a corporation and qualify for that particular?
Well, you have to be running an enterprise.
Right.
So the way I would say it is, you know, the comparison I always use is truck and trailer. The truck is your business that is operating. It's a business. Let's say, for instance, you're a commercial broker and you are operating your business. You've got multiple real estate agents and agents working for you. And then you decide, you know what, I no longer want to lease, I want to own. So you set up a holding company, you look to purchase a property. What then happens is you say, okay, well, I want to share my small business deduction, which is the ability to utilize the 12% tax rate in BC. And you, because I'm operating from that location, there are opportunities for then, as long as you're operating your business, and you're not utilizing the full amount of the small business deduction, which is profits up to $500,000, you can then allocate that to the holding company. So it's one thing, you know, that people should be asking their accountants to make sure that they're not paying too much tax if they already have that situation.
So if I'm operating my business in this commercial property I've purchased, then I could qualify for that. But if I'm leasing out the spaces, then maybe not. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. Yep. So if it's purely an investment and you're just receiving rental income, it's considered passive income. And if it's in a company, the tax rate's 51%.
Right.
Obviously net of costs, it's on the profit, but that is correct.
And so when you're taxed, I guess what you're being taxed on is the gain. And so then that would be once you sell it, right?
Yeah. So there's two elements to how you would get taxed. There's the income that you earn as you own the property. So let's say you're receiving rental income and it's a triple net lease. So the tenant is paying all of the outgoings, the property taxes, et cetera, the strata fees. Then what would happen is you would just potentially have holding costs. So if you borrowed money to purchase that property, you would have the interest on that, any banking fees, accountancy fees and things those costs would then reduce that rental income and you would pay tax at 51% on the difference.
Right.
When it comes to the capital gain side of it, you know, you hold it for 10 years and you decide to sell it, then after that 10-year period and when you sell it, the uplift, let's say you purchased it for $1 million and you're selling it for two, the additional $1 million that you're that's the gain is then subject to capital gains tax, and you would pay tax on that increase and that lift only when you sell it, if it's in a corporation.
Can we dig into that a little bit? That's one thing too. A lot of people that have commercial real estate, it's a question that comes up quite a bit, is I have to pay capital gains tax. And some people ask me, what is capital gain tax, or how much is it? How do I figure out what that is? Assuming I have a building that I purchased, let's say for $1 million, and I'm going to sell it for $2 million, what is my capital gain exposure on that lift, assuming before my costs?
Yep. So currently, let's say, you know, outside of all of the costs, your profit or your capital gain is $1 million. What it would be is you first have to look at the inclusion rate. Now, there is discussions to the government increasing the inclusion rate, which is basically saying how much money is going to be included from that capital gain in your taxable income. And at the moment, it's 50%. They're talking about it going to 75, but let's assume 50. So now all of a sudden, $500,000 of that capital gain is subject to tax. The other $500,000 is tax exempt, right? The other $500,000 must have tax paid on it. And that's what's exposed to the 51%.
So if I get that straight, so if I make $1 million, my first $500,000 is tax-free. That goes in my pocket. My second $500,000 profit on my million is subject to a 50% tax. So if I was just doing rough numbers and I made $1 million, I could arguably say that $250,000 or 25% of the total gain would be my potential capital gains exposure.
Correct. Thereabouts.
Now, is there anything, if I'm a seller of a building or I have a building that I want to sell, is there anything I could do to potentially lower my capital gain type of thing, maybe outside of the sale of this? Is there anything I could do from a personal standpoint that I could set myself up potentially to alleviate some of that if I knew I was selling a building this calendar year?
Yeah, there is the potential to do that. So there are some very specialized areas of the tax law which allow you to defer the tax. So for instance, we take our example of the commercial broker. They're doing absolutely fantastic and they want to expand. They need bigger offices. So they decide to sell the place that they're currently in, that they own in their holding company, that they're operating from, and they decide to purchase a new place, right? They go from 5,000 square feet to 10,000 square feet. Okay. All of a sudden, we can then look at that. And again, there's some technical aspects to it, but let's assume that they tick the boxes from the tax law perspective. We can then take that profit that they would have otherwise had, or the capital gain, and we can defer that until they sell the new property. Now, there are some nuances. The property must be purchased either 12 months before, a maximum of 12 months before or 12 months after the sale of the existing property that they have. And there's a few other requirements. But if they meet all of those requirements, and again, this is something to talk to the accountant about, then you would look to potentially be able to defer that capital gain. And if they stay there for another 20 years, that's 20 years of that $255,000 that they've now been able to defer, right? And that cash flow saving and that ability to compound that, as Warren Buffett would say, is everything that you want in an investment. 20 years of $255,000 reinvesting into your business is incredible.
So one thing we talked a little bit about when we started here was structures of different ways to buy commercial real estate. And you've talked about corporations buying it. And on the broker side of things, I'm going to throw a number out there. Maybe I'm wrong. 75, 85, 90% of typical sellers or buyers are buying through a corporation. Why do people buy commercial real estate in a corporation? Why doesn't Melissa just have it in her own personal name? Is there a tax benefit to that?
Yeah, 100% there is. So one of the big things in selling the shares of the company, if you own it within the company and you sell the shares, is that you don't have to worry about property transfer tax, at least in BC. So at the moment, there's a carve out that when you purchase the shares that you don't have to worry about property transfer tax. There are other risk factors to that, including, you know, that, you know, if the property was built 25 or 30 years ago, you may not be able to maximize your amortization on the value of the building itself. So there are, like, there are restrictions and you know, some negative points to buying the property through a company and selling the shares. But ultimately, it provides protection as well. So that's a big gain. So property transfer tax and protection from creditors, a separate entity. A corporation is considered its own being under the law. So those provide some pretty big benefits. And although the tax rate can be quite high, it's consistent. And so therefore, you know exactly what you're getting. You don't have to worry that your personal income increases and decreases and your marginal tax costs increase and decrease with that property.
So if I'm, like, say, an investor and I'm going to be investing in a company with other partners, mm-hmm. would it be best for me as an investor potentially have a holding company then to hold my shares of the company that then holds the real estate? Or is there any benefit to that? Because that's something we see a lot of things with syndications, is there'll be holding companies will be the partners within another company that then acquires the real estate. What would be the benefit of having a holding company hold my shares as a real estate investor?
Well, the benefit is that having that holding company allows for the benefit of no tax on the intercorporate dividends. So you basically, if the company that owns the property receives rental income and then, you know, dividends that out to your holding company, you don't pay, as long as the corporation that owns the property has paid all of its taxes appropriately, the dividend that comes out to you should not be taxed if it's in the holding company. But one interesting kind of alteration to that is owning the property through a partnership, in which case then if you did, you were a partner in that partnership and you had your holding company would pay the tax on that income. So it flows through all the income less the expenses, then gets divvied up amongst all the partners and goes out in accordance with the partnership agreement.
And let's say for example, if I'm Melissa and I'm investing in a limited partnership, and and Melissa personally invests in the limited partnership versus Melissa creates a company called Melissa Co. That money that is being distributed from the limited partnership back to Melissa in her personal name, she's paying income tax on that?
Correct. So the let's say it was, you know, it's a great investment and there's $20,000 of income there. And okay. Melissa earns $100,000 a year from her salary, wage, or business income personally. Then what would happen is that the $20,000 gets added to the $100,000. So now she's got taxable income of $120,000 and you'll pay tax on that. Now, if you're a high income earner, you don't want that because the, you know, in BC, the top tax rate is basically 53%. And so you say, well, I'm paying a lot of money in tax. So I can pay 51% in a company. And although it seems different, it also protects it, you know, and there's benefits. Again, if you want to reinvest that money into something else, another property, so on and so forth, then that's again how you can save a little bit of money in terms of taxes, but also create that, you know, the reinvestment and the wealth generation from that.
And so, how is that treated once you're selling it? So once you've, like, from the capital gains perspective, mm-hmm. if I had a holdco versus it was in my personal name, how is that treated? Is it treated differently?
No. So the capital gain is basically treated the same. The inclusion rate is both at a personal level and at a corporate level. The difference really comes down to what your personal income is. So you may have a very low personal income tax rate when you decide to sell the property, in which case then your capital gain, because the Canadian personal tax system is marginal, basically meaning that there's bands and steps and your tax rate increases as you earn more, then what happens is that amount will increase. So if you earn $200,000 from a capital gain and you had no income, that $200,000 you would pay tax marginally. So you get the benefit of the reduced tax rates as you go up to the $200,000 mark. So there can be a benefit to owning it personally. Although if it's commercial property, you really have to ask the question, you know, what are my risks? That something happens at the property, someone injures themselves, you're now personally liable. Do you want that property in your name? And, you know, again, people can do title searches and things like that to determine what's what. So usually most people will put it into a corporation or a partnership. There is also another structure, which is called a bare trust structure, which allows for the person or entity that's on title to hold it on behalf of somebody else. But that's more of a developer or a tax strategy on how to, that larger, sophisticated investors use.
So one question I have, and this is, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it on behalf of our listeners in case I could be wrong too. Is one thing we see out there right now, because interest rates are so high, financing is very challenging to get, vendor take-back mortgages from a seller. And for those who don't know what those are, if I have a property, let's say it's $1 million, potentially it's unencumbered, I don't know a mortgage on it, Melissa wants to buy it. She says, Cor, I'll give you $250,000 now, you be my bank and give me a 75% loan-to-value VTB. I'm going to pay you 5% interest only for 2 years. At the end of the two-year period, my $750,000 still comes due. She still has to pay me later. We see VTBs more and more right now in the current state of the debt markets. If I'm a seller, and let's say I'm exposed to a ton of capital gains on a property, if I do a VTB and I get, for argument's sake, 25% of my gain paid now and 75% of it paid at a later date, 3 or 4 years down the road, is that good from a planning perspective? If I have a big tax potential gain this year, taking a VTB in that scenario where I'm only paying cap gains on the 25% of the value of the property that I'm getting today, and then I'll pay cap gains at a later date down the road when I get the balance paid to me?
Correct. That's a great way of looking at it, and a concept that a lot of people don't utilize when looking at selling. And so, yeah, you can. So if you receive 25% of the proceeds on the sale and the residual 75% is paid out over 3-4 years after that sale, then yeah, you could definitely, then you're only paying tax on the 25% capital gain now. So basically you apportion the value of the property or the adjusted cost base across how you receive that money. So if it's 25% every year, then you obviously, the adjusted cost base is 25% every year. Now that has pros and cons. Again, it allows you to potentially find a buyer when in a bit more of a tougher market, like you said, or again, defer those taxes. You may have very little income in your personal name. You own that property in your personal name, and therefore every year when you're recognizing that tax, it's obviously having a lower impact on you. So if it's, $500,000, you're recognizing $100,000 a year, you're not going to be paying as much taxes if you recognize $500,000 all in 1 year. So there can be benefits for you as well as for the buyer.
What is the biggest mistake or misconception that people have about the accounting aspect on commercial real estate?
That it's super simple, but also complex. It kind of sits in the middle. When you approach your accountant, you should always be talking to them about circumstances, what you want to do with that property. You know, what's the best structure for you now, and also where you want to be in 5 years? Because I find that when I'm talking with clients, they're very much, I love the property, I want the property, I need it. And they're so caught up in, you know, the shiny object, as they say, that they forget that, you know, the structure that they put it in now may not be the best structure for them in 5 years' time with what they're hoping to achieve. So I think that from that perspective, you know, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So always look at the structure, because that is incredibly important. Look at your risks, the type of business that you operate, you know, how you're going to operate, what you think your income will be over those years, and you know, bring as many factors in and make an educated decision. Your accountant, the accountant, should really be that advisor that's saying, okay, you know, this is what I think is best for you based on where you want to be and what you're doing now. Sometimes people go, I'm going to buy a property personally because I don't want to pay the $1,500 to incorporate the company, and then I got to pay the accountant to do the taxes, and you know, it's just very simple if I do it myself and it's just my income. But then all of a sudden their income increases, you know, and now they're paying 53% tax because their income's $200,000 a year plus the investment income. So there can be some shortcomings. Also, you know, looking at buying the shares of a business as well, that's also another shortcoming. People look at it and say, yeah, I'm happy with purchasing the shares of the business, but you really want, like, especially if it holds property, you really want to understand that that business has never been trading before, that it's a clean corporation, that you've gone and sought legal advice and got, you know, warranty provisions in there, whether it's for, you know, the income taxes, the GST, any liabilities that may not be aware of, any illegal work that was done on the property. Again, if they've not got permitted work and you purchase the shares, you're ultimately responsible. If you've owned that property since it was purchased by the company, so you want to make sure that what you step into and what you acquire is the best for you, and that you're not walking in and receiving a problem, right? Because it can be quite costly on the other side.
So if I'm hearing you correct, commercial broker, accountant, lawyer, before you buy a piece of commercial real estate.
100%.
Ben,
you need to make sure that you've got the right advice. Get the best team around you possible and understand what you're acquiring.
Ben, I know you're a busy guy. We appreciate taking the time to come on today and kind of unravel a little bit of the mystery there about commercial real estate and the tax perspective of it. But we do have a segment of six lighthearted questions that we ask all of our guests. Can we keep you for just five more minutes?
Go for it.
All right, first question. Your favorite vacation spot?
I recently went to Portugal and I absolutely loved it.
Oh, amazing. I actually spent 6 months in Portugal. I studied there. Where did you go?
We went to Lisbon.
Oh, and, fantastic.
Beautiful place.
Yeah.
A bigger question is, what did you study there?
I did a semester of my business school there.
It's paid off well.
That's right.
Next question, Ben, a book recommendation you might have for our listeners doesn't necessarily have to be real estate.
Oh, interesting. Book recommendation. Traction by Gino Wickman. If you're in business, you know, building processes and procedures, it's a fantastic way of looking at your business and taking a different perspective.
We had another guest, I think it was maybe a year ago, recommend that. I never heard the book at that time. I went and downloaded an Audible. It's a great book. Highly recommend it. Hmm. There you go.
Awesome. All right. Next question. Your favorite band or musician?
Oh, it's going to sound very old school, but I'm a big fan of Michael Jackson.
Oh,
I don't know if we've ever had MJ.
I don't think so, but people that's a great
one. People would probably assume, because I have an Australian accent, that it would be AC/DC. But
MJ. What about this is one of my favorite bands when I was a kid? Silverchair.
Really?
Silverchair.
Any thoughts on
Silverchair?
Yeah.
Australian band.
I like Silverchair. No, it's a good band for sure. They're
I appreciate
there.
You getting my back there, Ben. All right, next one, Ben. Unfortunately, you've done something really, really bad. You found yourself on death row, but you got one more meal before they give you the death injection here. What meal are you having?
Oh, I don't think there's anything better than a freshly cooked homemade lasagna.
Oh.
Oh.
Fresh pasta and everything.
I thought you were going to say Outback Steakhouse.
Oh, ribs are up there. Ribs are definitely up there.
All right, next question. You're drunk at a bar. You're handed a mic. What song are you singing?
I used to do quite a bit of karaoke in my younger days. So my favorite song to sing was Akon's Smack That. Just because I know the words.
There's only two words. Just smack that.
The Eminem portion of it, that's the part that I actually know. The rest of it, really. Yes.
Do you want to give us the sample?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God. No. I'll
save
the listeners from...
All right.
Oh, yeah, no.
Maybe off.
You might lose some listeners there.
Okay.
Again, we're going back to that 90s rap, which is a really big component in commercial real estate, it sounds like. All right, Ben, last question up. Favorite TV show or movie?
A series of movies, but The Lord of the Rings. I'm a super nerd.
Oh.
Love the Lord of the Rings series.
I have a very, like, you know, there's certain parts in your life that you kind of go through and they kind of like stick out when you look back on it. And I remember I went to the first Lord of the Rings movie, and I can honestly say I've never had my ass fall asleep. And the whole time my bum was asleep, and I couldn't like walk around because the theater was packed, and I couldn't focus on the show because my butt fell asleep.
Oh my goodness.
I know that might be too much information, but every time someone says Lord of the Rings, I think about my butt falling asleep at Silver City and Mission.
Good times.
Wow. That's, you know, I'm an accountant, so I'm built for sitting.
There you go.
All right, Ben, for all of our listeners that want to find out more about yourself and Brass Financial, how can they reach you?
They can reach me at ben@brassfinancial.ca, or they can go to the website brassfinancial.ca and book a call, and we can go from there and I can see how I can help them.
Well, Ben, thank you once again for taking the time out of your day. I know you're busy to unravel a little bit of the commercial real estate accounting world for us.
No problem, Ben. At all. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Ben. Take care.
All right. You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. There you have it, folks. Our interview today with Ben Vella of Brass Financial. As I said in the intro, a lot of great takeaways.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people understand the accounting aspect of commercial real estate, different structures of commercial real estate, the benefits of different structures of commercial real estate, how you potentially can avoid property transfer tax and save hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars on big purchases.
Yeah. I got a lot out of that, actually.
Great episode. No, we always love having Ben come join us. I had to bug him a couple of times to get him on the program, but he came on. We've had some listeners that reached out to me and said, hey, we've just bought some commercial real estate. Mm. We don't really know about the accounting aspect. Do you guys have any plans to do an episode on accounting?
Mm-hmm.
Got the email, got on the phone with Ben, tied him down. Got an episode out of
it. Just how it's done.
Yeah. No, great episode as always. And residential, we were talking before we hit record earlier that you're saying that things are picking up again because every week we talk.
Yep.
And it feels like things are getting busier and busier and busier on the residential side.
Although it does feel a little spotty. It depends on the product type, but overall,
the weather.
Sometimes the weather too. Overall, it's definitely picked up. It seems like it kind of changes week by week though, you know?
Yeah.
One week we feel like it's busy and one week we're not quite sure.
Well, hopefully we get this rate pullback a little bit.
Yeah.
Coming here in the summertime-ish. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens there. But I'm sure that's going to spur the market, I would think, on the residential side.
Absolutely.
Demand must be huge. I know on the commercial side, we're busy, like really busy.
Yep.
And it feels like every week is getting that much busier.
Wow.
And the deal sizes are getting larger. Money's coming back into the system, cascading back in, it feels like.
Busier than you were before the interest rates started to go up?
COVID, no, because COVID money was pretty much all but free.
Yeah.
So that was a little chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
I would say we're getting back to kind of some pre-pandemic type thing feelings. I really think you're going to see towards the end of this year and throughout 2025, now that's assuming there's no black swan event, like no World War or anything like that happens. I really think we're going to get back to kind of that really chaotic feeling of kind of what we saw like 2016, 17, 18 type mm-hmm. thing, where good things are going to move. They're going to move quick because we're already seeing multiple offers again. Like yeah. It is market dependent.
Same on the residential side. Absolutely.
Are you seeing things go over asking yet?
Yeah. Not, I wouldn't say dramatically. It's not like it was, you know, a couple of years ago where people could just throw in another 50, 100.
Yeah.
Because interest rates were so low and that was easy.
Yeah.
But you're seeing a lot of demand in terms of the multiple offers, not necessarily the escalating prices though.
Offers up, prices not yet.
Slightly.
But it's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming.
I think so.
I was reading a good article there talking about pre-sales seem to be really, really picking up, which I would think if anything were to sell at a pretty good pace, it'd be pre-sales because you're selling something that may not be delivered till 2026 or maybe beyond that.
Yeah.
And then hopefully, fingers crossed, interest rates continue to come down. So by 2026, 2027, you're sitting at a much lower rate than we are today.
Yep.
Depending on who you talk to, maybe that BOC rate is 2.5-ish. Yeah. So you throw your 2.2 spread on that, get a prime of like 4.7. That's a pretty attractive number for prime. And if you qualify less than that, even better.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see pre-sales being pretty good. For those who want to participate in pre-sales or the multiple offer situation that you're dealing with,
yeah.
How can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can call me 778-869-4477 or email me at melissa@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
And for all those interested in commercial real estate, you can reach me at corey@williamwright.ca. Call us at our Vancouver office, 604-428-5255. Or you can always visit our website, williamwright.ca, and sign up for the latest and greatest news.
All right.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another great episode.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Subscribe today.